The Ryder Cup on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Now TV. Only pay for the days you want and stream all 10 Sky Sports channels with the Now TV Sky Sports Pass.
Good evening. Welcome to the beautiful Le Golf National on the outskirts of Paris. It is the eve of the Ryder Cup and we finally have got some pairings to talk about. We've got the best pairing possible. Europe's leading pair right here in this studio. Joe Molloy has arrived.
Oh.
Am I Patrick Reed?
I'm afraid so.
God damn it. So or maybe I'm Ricky Fowler and you're Dustin Johnson.
Maybe, yeah. So it's an extraordinary kind of build-up, isn't it, in that you have this very, 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 very slow week and then the opening ceremony and then suddenly four matches to talk about. All of a sudden there's so much to preview and get stuck into and it's going to be upon us and the whole thing goes from incredibly slow to 100 miles an hour now through until Sunday.
There's been a lot of moaning journalists over the last couple of days at the lack of storylines and the lack of controversy. And the second you get these four ball matches for tomorrow, suddenly you start to see, I wonder how he feels about that. I wonder how that's going to go down in the team dressing room. So if anybody has missed it and you've been out for the evening and you're wondering what is going to happen, tomorrow morning, 10 past 7 Irish time, leading out the European team are Justin Rose and John Rahm. It'll be Brooks Koepka or Tony Finau who will hit the opening shot of this Ryder Cup. So that is the first match. Match two is Rory McIlroy, who's been paired with the rookie Thorbjørn Olesen, and they're going to go up against the world number one Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler. Match three sees Paul Casey partnered by another rookie Tyrrell Hatton, and they take on the old mates Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas. And then it's Francesco Molinari and Tommy Fleetwood, who should be a real steady partnership during this Ryder Cup for Europe. They go up against Patrick Reed and Tiger Woods. It is all set up very nicely. Four of the five rookies start in the opening session for Europe. The likes of Garcia and Stenson are going to have to wait till the afternoon. And from an American point of view, no Phil Mickelson in the morning four balls, which is something of a surprise considering you would have thought with the way Mickelson is currently playing that four balls would suit him far more than foursomes. So who knows, maybe we go through a first day without seeing Phil Mickelson.
Certainly raises that possibility. I mean, he's not a young man and he has arthritis in his hands, and very possible Jim Furyk rang him and said, look Phil, here's the deal, you're going to play a lot on day two and three, come if you're happy with that. If you're going to throw the toys out of the pram, then don't come. I mean, it's very possible.
Phil, there's nothing to suggest that by me dropping you on day one that you will react to this badly and absolutely throw me under a bus come Sunday evening if we don't win this Ryder Cup.
It would be strange in a team this strong for Mickelson to be one of the go-to foursome players, given that he's so wild off the tee. However, this is a short course, and so he may only have to take out driver in a foursomes. Maybe not at all. Maybe not at all, actually, in a foursomes as opposed to a four ball. So who knows? I mean, it's very difficult to get inside the heads of either captain. I mean, the American picks, I think they would always look strong given how strong this team is. European ones have caught us all a little bit by surprise. I think a lot of us were expecting Rory and Rahm to go out tomorrow and really lead the charge. Rose and Rahm makes perfect sense. Steady Justin Rose, very experienced, and the fireball that is John Rahm. McIlroy and Olesen, just looking here at the American perspective on things, Brandel Chamblee was talking about Olesen. He's really not so sure that he's a good backup for Rory. Doesn't have a great record here in this course, often hasn't made the weekend, and a bit wild off the tee. Again, that may not be a factor with the driver, but Rory had a bad week off the tee as well last week, and we've just seen, interestingly, for a man who's had Michael Bannon as his coach all his life, Pete Cowan standing behind McIlroy on the driving range today. McIlroy going back and forth, making some, you know, swing moves, and then Pete Cowan giving some advice. I mean, that is not something that we've seen from Rory very often. That was quite striking. So the McIlroy-Olesen combination, I think, is the one that has us all a little bit intrigued.
You would have to assume that is simply a case that Pete Cowan is here working with several players involved in the Ryder Cup.
Stenson.
And is just taking
Molinari
a look. Brooks Koepka does some work with as well. So there's several players on both teams, because that was earlier today, the footage they were showing of Rory McIlroy. If there was any suggestion that Rory McIlroy was leaving Michael Bannon, having been with him for his entire career, and switching to Pete Cowan, it would be the story of the day before the Ryder Cup. It's clearly, Michael Bannon is obviously open to Rory taking advice from elsewhere, and Rory obviously just feels there's something that Pete Cowan can help him with.
Reportedly, it's not the first time Cowan has stood behind McIlroy at a range, but it's just interesting, you know. He didn't have a great week last week. I mean, it's mad we're here talking about golf, and so quickly we forget that Tiger Woods winning for the first time in 5 years. But Rory really didn't have a good Sunday, so very interesting to see how he comes out and plays tomorrow. Spieth and Thomas, they know each other forever; they're best friends. It's just a case of how well Spieth is playing. He hasn't had a great season by his standards, but Casey and Hatton. They will like the sound of Casey and Hatton.
Unquestionably. Casey has had fluctuating form. There have been times where he's looked brilliant. He's won on the PGA Tour this year. But Tyrrell Hatton is the real unknown quantity of this European team, in that temperamentally, is he going to be able to keep his head together if things start going wrong in front of 50,000 fans tomorrow?
Of all the rookies, he's the one you'd worry about. Perhaps they've put him out with a view to, if things don't go very well, then I may not put him out again, and at least he'll have played before Sunday. That could very well be the logic here. And then, I mean, match four is just drenched in quality. Like Tiger, Patrick Reed, brilliant in this competition as well, against, for this golf course in particular, Molinari and Fleetwood are two of the best positional players in the game. I mean, Molinari splits every fairway. He always did. He's won an Open now because he's learned how to putt. And then Fleetwood's super accurate as well. I mean, that one is a humdinger.
That is going to be, in a way it feels, Europe's marquee pairing, because I'd imagine they're going to stay together, all going well, for the foursomes, because they're probably the strongest foursomes pairing there is out of both teams. But going up against Patrick Reed and Tiger Woods, and listen, we've had a really enjoyable day because we went out early this morning, watched the American pairings. So, like, this was dream four ball if you're a golf fan. We're standing by the first tee. Who appears? Tiger Woods, Patrick Reed, Jordan Spieth, and Justin Thomas. So we walked a couple of holes with them, and it just gave a little sense of what it's going to be like tomorrow. Firstly, how difficult this course is, and it does feel, from listening to a lot of the players, that this is a very different Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
So often we become used to courses being set up for a birdie fest for a Ryder Cup, whereas this looks like it's a proper challenge.
Well, Spieth said there aren't going to be, this will not be necessarily a birdie type competition, so that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Conditions are perfect. I mean, it was hot today. I think it was 26, 27 degrees, and there was no wind, and it's going to stay that way. First tee tomorrow, 6,500 fans. It's been talked about a lot. Glen Eagles had 2,148. Hazeltine, which was very exciting 2 years ago on the first tee, only had 1,600. We're suddenly up to 6,500. I know it's been the most repeated cliche of the week, but I only got here today. I mean, I've never seen a stand as high at a golf tournament. And when you're there on that first tee, we know from 4 years ago, we know what it's going to be like. So really interesting to see how that plays out, because unlike in Glen Eagles 4 years ago, we have water all down the left and you can't really go right. It is a treacherous, awful nightmare first tee shot at the best times.
You look at that first tee shot and you would have to assume that nobody's going to go in the water, because they're going to hit an iron, they're going to go slightly right, but then the pressure kicks in. And even if you survive that, the approach to the first green is over water. The second hole is a short par three downhill, all over water. We saw Jordan Spieth go into water on the second during the practice round earlier. It's just treacherous, and under that level of pressure, it's going to ask questions that some of these players will never have faced before. So that was the early part of the day. Both teams played just the nine holes, and then we went to the opening ceremony, which, listen, how many opening ceremonies have you been to that you've been excited about? London 2012, this wasn't quite at that level. We had the Kaiser Chiefs, who turned up and took the buck and were very impressive. David Ginola,
presenter. He's very much the Gary Lineker of French television. He's very good, David Ginola.
He is,
it's a lot of pressure. He did very well, and he loves his golf. I mean, it's the Rose Tralee of sports, the opening ceremony at the Ryder Cup. It is a strange parade of I don't know what.
And it was a parade of both teams coming in. They introduce player by player.
Yeah.
By far, out of both teams, the biggest cheer, hairs on the back of your neck style cheer, was when Tiger Woods' name was called.
It's an amazing moment. And I know we're going to talk about the Furyk speech in a moment as well, which actually, unusually, I mean, the only time, the general rule here is, like a referee, if your speech is being talked about, you've done a Nick Faldo. Mm. You've done something really dumb and made a fool of yourself. Furyk is one of the times, I think, we're going to talk about a speech for positive reasons. His speech finished, as they all do, with him going through the team one by one, and they stand up. And I mean, talk about writing your own script. You go alphabetically. Guess who's last? And I mean, generous cheers for some. Spieth got a good cheer. Patrick Reed got pantomime boos, that kind of stuff. It got to Woods, and I think we knew from this morning watching his practice session that the reception was phenomenal for Woods. But I mean, to get across to people, it was one of the moments of the Ryder Cup already. It was a magical moment. The entire, I think 40,000 people, I mean, and all the people in front of us, the dignitaries, all stood European, and it didn't stand for anyone else.
No, this was a 90-second standing ovation.
Yes.
With Tiger looking uncomfortable.
Deeply uncomfortable. And then it went, Tiger, Tiger, Tiger. I mean, it was just like the whole golfing world saying, welcome back and thank you for putting our children through college. Journalists were saying that to him. But it was, I mean, I'm not over-egging it. It was a really great moment.
It was. And the speeches were interesting, not in a Nick Faldo kind of way. It wasn't a car crash.
What was Faldo's way? To McDowell, he said he doesn't even know what country he's from.
Yeah, something about potatoes with Porter Carrington.
Yeah.
It was a dark, dark day for
bad for Faldo.
Nick Faldo and for European golf. Let's hear a little bit of Jim Furyk and then we'll chat about it.
The story of America is a story that has been written over many years by many hands. And that story cannot be told without talking about the close bond that has tied America and France together. From Lafayette standing alongside Washington to the magnificent gift of the Statue of Liberty presented by the people of France to the people of America in 1886. And to our alliance during the struggle for freedom during the 20th century. The people of America are forever linked to the people of France. For more than 200 years, we have been friends and allies. And this week, as a token of our special bond, our American players will be playing with bags that have the symbol of the Statue of Liberty emblazoned on them. This will serve as a reminder that while inside the ropes we may compete against each other, outside the ropes we stand together, as we always have, as we always will. And so, before we play any golf and before we compete against each other, it's altogether appropriate for me to say on behalf of the people of America, to the people of France, merci beaucoup.
Jim Furyk, statesmanlike.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful speech from Furyk. Very much at odds with what we think of golfing community in America, a very Republican community.
Yeah.
Speaking about their allies, the French allies, going back in history, the strong connection between the two countries.
I mean, he was on the point of saying sorry for our president. And let's not let him get in the way of things. It was very pointed, really good, and went down incredibly well. So I was sitting there going, do you know what? You don't expect much from these speeches. They're generally fairly forgettable. But that was good from Furyk.
He touched all the right pressure points. There was a nice little bit of emotion in there at times as well.
Well, he mentioned his parents. He got quite emotional and mentioned his wife. So yeah, it was good.
Thomas Bjorn did well.
He did, yeah.
He was very strong on the pro-European front. He was on the verge of going on an anti-Brexit rant.
Oh, he's voting Remain.
But it was, as opening ceremonies go, it was one of the more interesting.
Yeah.
So that's sort of been the story of the day. We're going to be here bright and early tomorrow morning as well. And we're going to join by Andrew Cotter in a few minutes, which we're looking forward to. But Jamie Donaldson was the hero 4 years ago when Europe won the trophy under Paul McGinley at Glen Eagles. He's over here working with the BBC as well. And he was very kind earlier. He dropped in the studio for a few minutes.
All right, I'm delighted to be joined in our little booth here at Le Golf National by the hero of the last European team that won the Ryder Cup in home soil at Glen Eagles 4 years ago now. Jamie Donaldson, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
What was it, a 147-yard pitch and wedge? Have you ingrained in your mind?
46, downhill, a little bit of wind off the right. A perfect number for a pitching wedge at the time.
Where's the club now?
Be about a 7-iron now. The club now is safely hidden at home somewhere, so that it's still got the mud in the grooves that I won't be doing much with for the foreseeable future. But yeah, I mean, it's more the memories and being there, and you know, more importantly, being on a part of being a part of a winning Ryder Cup team, which is much better than hitting. The winning shot is the icing on the cake, but being part of that team that wins that trophy back is very important.
Yeah. And what do you do? Do you go back to swing thoughts? Do you go back to 10 years earlier, a shot you played? What sort of mindset are you in as you're standing over that?
It was just a perfect everything. It was a perfect yardage. It was a perfect wind direction. It was a perfect flag. Four up with four to play in the match. So all I'm thinking is get it online and it's close, because my bad shot during for that week was a slight pull, so the flag was on the right, so if I pull it I'm in the middle of the green and I've still forced play 15 foot from the hole. If I don't pull it, start on the right line, it's perfect. So and I did, and that's what happened.
You mentioned McGinley there and some of the messages that he was giving during the week, and that was your one and only Ryder Cup, but I'm sure you've spoken to a lot of other players who played on under other captains. Was his very different? Was his on another level to anybody that had gone before and that anybody who's gone since?
Yeah, he was very, very good. He didn't have the CV that a lot of the other captains have had, but he made up for that in his brilliant captaincy. No stone was left unturned, and he worked tirelessly to make sure he spoke to all the players about who they wanted to play with, you know, to such an extent that, you know, everybody, you know, felt a real strong part of a really, you know, successful unit.
So that was Jamie Donaldson, who dropped into studio earlier.
Didn't have time to ask him about 11 Sports coverage, which was a pity, I felt. But we're basically just using all the BBC staff for this hour of the
show. It's genius.
Yeah, yeah.
They've spent an absolute fortune.
Fly them over.
We're going to get Chappers on soon. Over the weekend, we're definitely getting Chappers
on. Coming on, yeah, yeah. And Ollie Wilson's here as well.
Ollie Wilson.
We'll get him
on. Definitely use him.
Yeah.
And anybody we can get for free. Our setup here is actually better than 11 Sports was for the PGA.
I will, like 11 Sports, I will draw an OTB logo here and put it behind us.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we're back with Andrew Cotter.
The Ryder Cup on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Now TV. Only pay for the days you want and stream all 10 Sky Sports channels with the Now TV Sky Sports Pass.
All right, you're very welcome back to Le Golf National. It is the eve of the 42nd Ryder Cup. We are here in the media centre and we've just been digesting the four ball matches for tomorrow morning. And to digest a little bit more, I'm joined by one of the silkiest voices in showbiz. It is the great Andrew Cotter.
Well, is any of that true, what you just said? Now I feel I have to be extra silky, but great. No, I've never described as great. But thank you. That's very kind of you. I will. Are you going to ask me for lots of stats now on how many matches
have
each of these
stats?
Players have won? No, I've got the matches, the matchups, but you have that as well. You've been talking about it, I'm sure. But stats. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of matches, a lot of partnerships that are new. I mean, a lot of that is out of necessity because there are a lot of rookies out there. But there's a lot of untried, untested partnerships out there, so it'll be very interesting. There are a couple of matches that stand out for me really as the big matches in the four balls, and that would be Johnson and Fowler. And they've never played together, despite being Ryder Cup sort of veterans, against McIlroy and Torbjörn Olesen. And then the last one, Tiger Woods and Patrick Reed,
yeah,
against Molinari and Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, the other matches are big as well. Koepka and Finau against Rose and Rahm, and Spieth and Thomas against Casey and Hatton. But those two, the second and fourth matches, really stand out for me.
Brandel Chamblee seemed somewhat surprised that Torbjörn Olesen was the one that was put with Rory McIlroy. There was a lot of speculation it would be John Rahm. Who knows, maybe we do see it at some stage of the week. But seemed to feel that, bizarrely, because McIlroy had such a tough time of it at the Tour Championship, that he needed a steadier hand with him for the opening morning, rather than very much what Thomas Bjorn seems to have done, go with an experienced head and a rookie in each of the pairings.
I think as well, McIlroy likes Olesen a lot, knows him quite well, and again, there's a bit of a connection, there's an old Nike connection there as well, but yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Rahm, We thought as well that because we'd seen them playing together and we'd heard whispers that Rahm and McIlroy were going to be possibly playing together. But Rahm's a less stable character perhaps than Torbjörn Olesen. So I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting. We're going to Thomas Bjorn's thoughts shortly. I know he's speaking to the press imminently. So we'll be getting his thoughts on various partnerships. I hope he is asked about that one because that's an interesting one. I didn't see that one coming. But I can understand it in four balls. You know, sometimes it's best to have two chances at a birdie in four ball. And you know, you don't want somebody's, people say, oh, such and such is a good four ball player because they'll make a few birdies but they'll make a few mistakes. Actually, you probably want someone who's pretty consistent, because you'd rather have two 20 footers at a birdie than you know, just one 5 footer. That's kind of the thinking, and Olesen is one of the straightest players out there as well.
Is that right? Because interestingly, Chamblee was making the argument that he's not good off the tee.
Well, Chamblee has got a few stats at hand, I'm sure, but he is I'll tell you what he is, Olesen, is he's a great iron player. So if he finds a fairway, he's going to give himself chances.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing about
Well, he's
the
not going to have to take driver off all that many holes either, so maybe he will find fairways. But he was saying he's got a bad... I didn't realise this about Olesen. He's got a bad record on this course.
Mm.
He's played here a number of times.
He finished third here 2 years ago.
Yeah,
he hasn't always made the
aside
weekend.
Aside from that, he's had a bad record.
Yeah, he's had a very bad record aside from that.
And we're being chamblied here. We're being fully chamblied.
Well, listen, if you can't be chamblied...
No.
You're in no business. But he made the point that McIlroy struggled to touch off the tee last week. And, interestingly, who was standing behind Rory this afternoon on the range as Rory went back and forth for advice? Only Pete Cowan.
Oh.
which is kind of an interesting development for the boy who's had the same coach since he was a boy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I presume Michael Bannon, well, I wasn't out in the range, I presume Michael Bannon is in town, but Pete Cowan, everyone respects Pete Cowan, and actually there are certain coaches who are not selfish coaches, they wouldn't mind a little bit of input from another one. I think Michael Bannon would be one of those. But this is the sort of, I was about to say the joy of the Ryder Cup, but it's actually, I find it quite torturous as well, because it's four of the worst days in golf followed by the three best days in golf, because all we do for 4 days is guess. That's all we do until the first shots are hit. Now, Thomas Bjorn may well have seen something just in practice out there. He sees a bond between two players, or he sees that Olsen is hitting it particularly well in practice. So there is clearly thinking behind it that we aren't party to. So, I again, you know, the proof is in the birdieing, or lack of it.
It'll be interesting to hear his thoughts on Rose and Ram together, and whether it is the emotional side of things that he's looking at there with the huge crowds that are going to be there, keeping such a steady head like Justin Rose alongside John Rahm.
Yin and Yang.
Yeah.
Yin and Yang. Yin and Yang. Anyway, yes, absolutely that, because Rahm will be getting... you know, people have been saying as well that he's something of a plastic Spaniard. He lives in Spain, in America, and he's gone to college there, and he's been there since he was 16, whatever, and he's fully integrated into American life. But actually, he is as passionate a Spaniard, and for European, as when you hear him talk, sometimes it is the people who have moved away from the country that become more passionate about it. I think he's going to be one of the real finds of this Ryder Cup, John Rahm. You know, he's 23, he's the youngest guy in the European team, but he doesn't look that way physically.
No.
And I don't think, I think sometimes he's got a bit of a youngster's temperament on him, but I think that can almost help in the Ryder Cup if you're placed in the right partnership. And I think what you say there is, with placing him with Justin Rose, a steady hand on the tiller, that's a pretty good idea.
McIlroy was saying in the WhatsApp groups, Rahm's been very vocal. You know, he compared it with Celtic Manor when McIlroy was kind of, you know, well, he said, I wasn't as good a player as Rahm is now, but I was very much keeping to myself. I let the senior members of the team decide what's what. But Rahm has been given his input and deciding.
He's nailing the WhatsApp groups.
So. He really is. Koepka and Fina, I mean, that's it's going to be a fantastic first match.
Yeah, I mean, both of those players, if you're talking about accuracy, I hope Brandl back me up on this, but they, you know, they're both pretty inaccurate off the tee. But again, this is what we've been saying, you know, we've been saying about, oh, the Americans, big hitters, but a bit wayward. But as you mentioned earlier, this isn't a course where you hit driver. Now, these are some of the best players in the world. They can hit fairways with irons, and they're long enough to take irons and actually still get it out there, Johnson and Koepka and, you know, whoever. So I love all the talking. I don't really, I hate it, but it's just, it's again, we don't know what's going to happen, and we love to play these games about, oh, why have they been part of what, and there are a couple say, oh, does he not like him, and actually there is I'm not going to say there's a group that is put together because other people won't play with him, but
there's a factor. I mean, Jamie Donaldson, we were chatting to him earlier, and he said McGinley went around and said, who do you want to play with, and of course you're not going to say, I want to play with the bloke over there I don't really like.
No,
human nature.
Exactly. So there are obviously personalities that don't get on particularly.
So who
well.
Exactly then?
Well, her and
on a separate note, Tyrrell Hatton.
Thank you for saving me.
Is an interesting character.
Yes.
People may not have seen a huge amount of him on the European Tour and may have just seen him in bite-sized chunks. He generally tends to turn up in your Twitter feed on a Monday for 10 seconds.
What has he done?
Getting very angry and shouting at his ball or chasing after it and just very much fed up with life. Having followed him on tour for the last couple of years, what sort of character is he outside the ropes?
Oh, he's a lovely guy. Yeah, absolutely lovely guy. But he's one of these guys that turns into the monster on the course. Can sometimes turn into the monster. He's not sort of... I mean, Monty would be fairly consistently monstery on the course, whereas Tyrrell Hatton just has moments where he explodes, and he's petulant. I remember Gary Evans having a go at him for being a bit childish, but I don't, you know, he sort of apologised afterwards and said, look, nobody's perfect. He has moments, he cares and he really wants to do it, and it's just in his temperament. You can't alter your temperament, and again, sometimes in the Ryder Cup, that temperament is no bad thing. I'll tell you who has had one of the worst temperaments as an individual over the years in terms of petulance and losing it is Sergio Garcia. And then he comes to the Ryder Cup. And I think sometimes when you come to that team environment, you realise that you cannot be that selfish individual. And you have to channel that frustration to the greater good of the team. So Tyrrell Hatton might well be one who emerges as someone using that sort of real determination and focus in a positive way.
Four of the five European rookies are out tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
It feels strange even describing John Rahm and Tommy Fleetwood as rookies,
well, exactly,
considering all that they've achieved.
the thinking behind that and leaving three of the wild cards sitting out tomorrow morning, is it that if it goes horribly wrong, you need to have something to turn to, that if you find yourself 3-1 down, you don't want to be looking at three rookies on the bench. You can bring in the power of Garcia, Stenson.
Well, I think it sends out a message as well. It says, as you've just touched upon, that our rookies are rookies in name only. They are big game players, and we're happy to start with them. And, you know, long gone are the days of Brooklyn 99, where you had Van de Velde and Coulthard and Jarmo Sandler and all you know, sitting out until the
Sunday.
The singles. So, again, I think it just speaks to the sort of strength and depth in the team, because again, it is fantastic to have the players in a European point of view, to have Garcia, Stenson, whoever, sitting on the sidelines waiting to come in. So
I think there was a touch of learning from 2 years ago as well, where they were 4-0 down after the morning, so worst case scenario, and suddenly the plan had to be understandably ripped up. And I think Peters and McElroy, who had done very little together, were thrown out together, go and get us a point, please, for the love of God. So I think, as Nathan says, there's almost an element here of, well, I want, because we've so many rookies, let's get them all out in day one, and they're better off going out at nil all than maybe 2 or 3-1 down with a lot of pressure on them.
I mean, and it's interesting you mentioned Peters and McElroy. We talk about all the science that goes into the partnerships, and that one was one that just came together at the last minute. They thought, right, okay, you two play together, and they were a smash hit. So
it proves captaincy is a nonsense, doesn't it, Andrew? You think that deep down?
I kind of do think captaincy is a nonsense. I think in a lot of sport, not a lot.
Say that to Paul McGinley's face.
Well, I was with him at a dinner the other night, and I was saying that I do say, you know, how important it, because Paul McGinley, the detail that he put in. I'll tell you what captains can do. They put the structure in place, and they let the players want for nothing. They make them feel good about themselves. I suppose, you know, he took advice from Alex Ferguson, and a good captain is like a good football manager, in that they, if someone is needing a bit of a G up, they can do that. Or if someone needs some stern words or whatever, they can do that. They can manage the players. And these are individual egos. Golfers are the most egotistical sportsmen on the planet, because they live in a bubble of one for, you know, the whole of the rest of their career. So to get them into that team ethos, to get them together, yes, there is a strong element of good captaincy in that. But I think choosing the pairings, if I'm brutally honest, I think that's probably the least part, important part of being a captain.
We've set a world broadcasting record, you'll be pleased to hear.
Right.
2018, this is the longest a golf conversation has gone on without mention of Tiger Woods.
Switching off.
It's extraordinary. I mean, the opening ceremony, we were at it. I don't know, did you watch it closely?
I watched it. I observed it from a distance.
Okay. The reception Tiger Woods got is already one of the moments of the 2018 Ryder Cup. Yeah. It was extraordinary.
And we should make that very clear, because talking to the lads back at base, they were saying that it came across as if there were a lot of boos when Tiger Woods arrived on stage, which was just bizarre, because it was quite literally a standing ovation for Tiger Woods.
It was. I think there were sort of some roars and a handful at most of pantomime boos mixed in with it. It was a guttural roar of people are just excited to see him here. They don't care which side he's on. He's Tiger Woods. He's on the side of Tiger Woods. He's just on the side of awesomeness. So, but interestingly, who's he playing with? The guy who did get the worst reception up there, Patrick Reed. But Patrick Reed loves that. He stood up and cupped his hand to his ear once again and said, bring on the booze, not the alcohol, bring on the jeers, and I will relish it, and I will beat you down. That's a strong partnership. But it takes a strong player to play with Tiger Woods.
Yeah, we were remarking upon that earlier, that one of the reasons Tiger, it seems, or so they say, has a bad Ryder Cup record is that it's not so much he doesn't play well, it's the poor bloke next to him.
His singles record is good. It's pretty good. So,
remember Reed a couple of years ago when he won, was it a WGC, or won a big tournament? It wasn't a WGC, but a couple of years ago, very prematurely came out and said, well, look, it's me, Tiger, and the rest, that's how I sort of feel about the game, or something along those lines.
Poulter went with that line. He went with the I'm a top five player in something the world, like long before he actually was.
And so there are the two players you've mentioned there, are the guys who said, you know, when we're playing at our best, it'll just be me and Tiger, and everyone laughed. And when it comes to the Ryder Cup, Poulter and Reed are the beasts. They are fantastic. I think Reed probably has taken over that mantle. It'll be interesting to see who Poulter gets on now, because I don't think he's the, even though he's played very well this year to get into it, he's not quite, I don't think he'll quite be the Ryder Cup monster that he had been in the past. You could see him slightly fading, perhaps at Glen Eagles, and then at Hazeltine, you know, he didn't make the team, he was there as a vice-captain. But Patrick Reed, and he's backed it up, hasn't he? He's backed up that chat even in individual golf. So I kind of, you know, I know he's not tremendously popular with a lot of people, and he's had all sorts of issues off the course coming through college and with his family as well. But I admire Patrick Reed because he talks the talk and then he walks the walk, and he gets people interested as well. You need a bit of a pantomime villain. You need a bad guy. You need someone to say, oh. But he backs it up, and he'll be fantastic for America again.
Yeah, they said all the right things at the opening ceremony about playing this game in the right spirit. I'm like, no. War on the shore, Brookline, this is what we want.
Those are the two Ryder Cups that I remember. I don't know why I'm wagging my finger at you. I'm doing a sort of Ben Crenshaw there. Those are the two Ryder Cups that I remember most fondly, even though Europe lost, because they're the ones that I remember being great sporting occasions. I remember, and perhaps it was because it was still on terrestrial TV back in the day, I remember Kiawah Island getting mentioned. You remember the Mary Whitehouse experience with David Baddiel and Rob Newman and Hugh Punter? It was on the UK. Big, big comedy programme. And it even got mentioned on that. That's how much it cut through. Kiawah Island was just enormous. And Brookline was huge. And people were scandalised and throwing back their hands and saying, oh, this is appalling. This isn't what golf is about. But secretly, I bet they loved it deep down inside. People love that aggravation.
When did you start covering the Ryder Cup then, Andrew?
First one I covered was actually the Belfry in 2002, the one that was supposed to be in 2001, and then it went on to 2002. So that was the first one I covered. So, but I mean, the first one I watched, I remember watching Walton Heath 81 on television, which, again, you wouldn't see much of it on television in those days.
We were trying to debate, is the 81 American team, is that the best team of all time, or is it the 2018 version?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about majors, there was only one player on the American team, Bruce Litsky, who hadn't won a major. So, you know, that's pretty strong. Mm. And that was, you know, the biggest American win of all time, 9 points, I think it was. So, this is a strong, strong team. But I would say 81. People have short memories. They always think that, you know, that sport was invented about 2 years ago, and that this must be the best team of all time. But the 81 American team would probably go down as the best.
You obviously spend a lot of time covering all the biggest events. You get to go to Wimbledon. You're covering Six Nations games.
Yeah.
What is it about these 3 days, after all the nonsense, not just this 24 hours, 2 years of speculation, of guessing, of gossiping, what is it about these 3 days that set the Ryder Cup apart?
Well, it's golf, which I love, but it's golf with the atmosphere of a Six Nations game or an Olympics, you know, a big athletics stadium or whatever, or you know, final at Wimbledon. It's taking the best of other sports in terms of atmosphere and transplanting it to a golf course. I got pilloried the other day because I said, I would rather have a half-point American win than a 9-point European win. And the point I'm making about that is I love sporting drama. Yeah. I love it coming down to the very last. You know, the wins for Europe in 2004, 2006, great. And it was great to see those wins, and they were emphatic and they were wonderful. But they were a bit, on the Sunday, they were a bit flat.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the great matches, you just wanted to come down to the final two matches, because the atmosphere then is second to none in any sport.
We obviously, I mean, everybody listening was very familiar with Darren Clark 2 years ago and Paul McGinley as well. Thomas Bjorn, less so. I think the general perception of him would be a bit grumpy, you know, a bit gruff, rougher in the edges.
Yes.
Someone you've known, spoken to down the years, what are you made of his captaincy, how he's carried himself?
I know Thomas well. I like Thomas.
Is he gruff and cranky?
Because
and
I think he sees in me a kindred miserable spirit. But he is, no, he is, he is. He's got a great dry sense of humour, and he has got a great sense of humour. He's very dry, and he doesn't suffer fools. And
have you ever been a fool in his presence?
Oh, many times, but I've been being paid for it at the time, so I don't care. He's fantastic. I like Thomas Bjorn a lot, and I think he has tremendous respect of the European players, because he's a pretty serious operator and has been around for such a long time. So I think he'll do a good job. But I have to say, I'm a big fan or admirer or respecter of Jim Furyk. I think he's a pretty serious customer as well. And his speech, you know, was very, very good.
We were saying earlier, the speech was really powerful at one point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it touched all the right notes as well. And the old.
I thought he was one step away from saying presidents come and go, you know? We'll endure.
It did feel both speeches, but Bjorn didn't quite go as far, but was very much about the unity of Europe and getting behind the flag. That has the captaincy switched into this. you have a geopolitical role that everyone's now going to be watching out to see what you say on behalf of your continent.
Bjorn is voting Remain, and I now want to check what way Jim Furyk's voting in the presidential election. Well, I thought it was
How does that go down in the American dressing room, pro-Republican?
I said to you, as Tiger was going to take a knee here during the anthem, it's all kicking off.
Wouldn't that be great?
Would have been the greatest moment in sporting history.
Oh, it would have been. Golfers stay away from politics altogether, and as you know, when McIlroy has touched upon it, you get itself in all sorts of trouble. But I would love to see more golfers be a bit more political. I think we should all be more political. It's these are important times, but serious
Furyk,
there really was there was definitely a political cue from both speeches. So I don't know. I think Jim Furyk probably recognises that America's stock with the rest of the world is lower than it has been for some time. So they're here on a bit of a PR exercise as well, and you've got to play that game. It's like the Europeans when they were over at. Was it Oakland Hills when the Americans were only playing 9 holes practice? The Europeans said, right, we're going to get and play 36 holes. Doesn't matter if you're tired by the end of it. Play 36 holes, wave to the crowd, sign autographs, take photos. And they got a lot of the crowd on side. So you've got to play that PR game as well.
He played it very well. I mean, even listeners might have heard the full speech. Talked about the relationship going back years and how it will always endure. And mentioned, obviously, 20th century, the World Wars. And then all the Americans are going to play with the Statue of Liberty on their bag. A present from France.
Oh, see, I didn't hear that, but I heard him referencing the Statue of Liberty, of course, which is, you see, a gift from France, and I heard that, but I didn't realise they had it on the bag.
Yes,
right.
On the bag all week. I mean, that got a huge cheer. It's a really clever gesture.
It is. Is it laying it on a bit thick?
You're the cynic.
It's just saying on the bag, you might as well write, please like us.
Well, I do wonder if maybe he spotted an opportunity. We saw the response to Tiger Woods, that this is a first Ryder Cup, that there isn't a home player playing, that a lot of these French supporters are coming just to enjoy the golf, not maybe to get behind the European flag.
I think a lot of the spectators who are here may be coming to a golf event for the very first time, and they may not really know what's going on, but they'll know Tiger Woods, and so they'll just be tremendous. I think he'll get as much support as any European out there. But
he did today.
Well, he did, but the thing, we always say that, and then once the match starts, and once the American fans start chanting, then that gets a response. So
Patrick Reed will drag his popularity down by association, surely.
Unless he comes out like Apollo Creed against Rocky, dressed up as the Statue of Liberty. And then we say, Jim Furyk and your team, you are laying it on a bit thick. Wouldn't that be great? Oh, if he came out as Old Lady Liberty. And it's not going to happen, is it?
It's unlikely, I would think.
Yeah, it's a slender chance.
So, call these for us. Koepka Finau versus Rose Ram. Koepka Finau versus Rose Ram.
I was going to say they're all tough. I'm going to say Rose and Ram on that one.
Okay, that's Europe one up. Yeah. Fowler and Johnson against McIlroy and Olesen. The Chamblee kiss of death there.
I think Johnson and Fowler. I think Johnson Fowler might get that one. I'm going to say half for that one. Half match.
Johnson and Fowler smart enough for this shorter course?
I'm going to say half match. I'm going to say with that it's four balls. I'm just going to say half match.
Poor Dustin Johnson. He's not an idiot. He's the world number one.
Do you know, I did a thing with him out in Abu Dhabi at the start of the year. And it was a sort of a top golf challenge. And it was him and Matt Kuchar against Rosen Stenson. I thought, well, these two, because I was sort of to MC it. And I thought, well, I'll get some cutting humour from Rose and saying they'll be great. And Johnson, he was fantastic, and he was actually pretty funny.
Right.
So my estimation of DJ has.
Does he just maybe have a slight disdain for the media?
I think so. I think he's fairly well watched as well. I think he probably does. I don't think he's quite as light bulb off as people make out.
Take it as quite a compliment of your emceeing skills, because even watching him on Sky with Claude Harmon, Claude is trying to drag it out of him.
I don't know. He was let's move on. So what are we saying? Half match for that one.
We're saying Cotter brought out the best in Johnson.
I say half match for that one.
So that's one and a half to a half.
Yep.
Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, best buddies.
They'll win that one.
Casey and Hatton.
See, there we go. I've just said they'll win that one. I don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody knows.
Hatton nervous? Hatton looks a bit nervous to us.
I must be nervous. Yeah. But Jordan Spieth hasn't been playing particularly well. Justin Thomas is at a bit of an injury. In fact, Spieth's had a bit of an injury as well. I think they've injured opposite hands or something like that. So, but I still think those two, they go way back to junior times.
Yeah.
I think those buddies will do it.
So we're 1.5 apiece now.
Yeah.
And then Tiger and Patrick Reed come out against Molinari, open winner, and Fleetwood, who got a great reception actually today as well. Very popular.
I mean, that is a strong, strong European partnership, but I don't see Reed losing too many matches. I don't know. Can I call that one a half? I mean, I am in agony from the fence.
If you want to be boring, you can. I mean,
is that a partnership that could go right through the weekend, Molinari and Fleetwood, that he'll stick with them for the foursomes as well?
Well, I mean, they're surely going to be playing foursomes because they are two of the straighter guys in the game. So, I mean, I would certainly see them in the foursomes. But again, you know, we saw with McIlroy and Hazeltine, you know, you can't... You need guys to play five matches. That is so, so tiring. I mean, it is when you give so much to yourself, as McIlroy did at Hazeltine. I think he burned himself out.
He said he's not going to do that again in terms of the crowd.
He'll pace himself, yeah, exactly, because you do sort of let yourself go a little bit. So what are we at? 1.5, 1.5 until that final match, and then... hey, half match there, 2-2. We're all friends here.
Andrew Cotter, you have provided the silkiness that we required
desperately
this
needed,
Thursday evening. Presenter of the Cut podcast, we should mention as well, that we do enjoy. Though there are other podcasts
available,
such as Golf Weekly, which is available right now.
Golf Weekly, I'm going to go and download that and subscribe to it.
Hey, dude, that is the
and leave a review
point.
Without even listening to it, I'm going to say this is.
We don't care if you listen. Just leave the positive review and send a few retweets. That's all that matters.
Who are you going for overall? If you had to gun to your head.
I think Europe.
Do you? Yeah. Most people I'm talking to are saying US.
Yeah, they are, but I mean, just looking at the course and looking at the stats and how many rounds the Europeans have played here. And I know it's a very different thing playing here, a different setup, a different feel to the course than when they play the French Open in June, but I don't know. It's familiarity breeds... No, contempt, doesn't it? Oh dear, that doesn't work. Right, okay, I'm going to be the first person to say, I don't know who's going to win. None of us knows who's going to win. I haven't even got a guess for you because the two teams are so evenly matched. I just hope that golf is the winner. And I'll leave you with that.
That's
what a beautiful way.
Beautiful sentiment.
To
you should do a Ryder Cup speech.
On this Thursday evening from Le Golf National. So the tee times, you need to be up bright and early back at home. It's 8:10 here in France tomorrow morning. 7:10 back in Ireland. Justin Rose and John Rahm up against Brooks Koepka and Tony Finau. Then it's McIlroy and Olsen against Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler. Casey and Hatton up against Spieth and Thomas. And Molinari and Fleetwood up against Team America themselves, Patrick Reed and Tiger Woods. We'll be live on OTB AM tomorrow morning. Updates throughout the evening as well. We shall talk to you then. Good luck.
The Ryder Cup on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Now TV. Only pay for the days you want and stream all 10 Sky Sports channels with the Now TV Sky Sports Pass.